Hello, everyone, and welcome back to I'm James, and as always, I'm joined by the brilliant Lisa. How are you doing today, Lisa?
Hi, James. I'm doing great, thank you. I'm really excited about today's topic. We're diving into something that can transform classrooms and help both students and teachers thrive.
Absolutely. Today, we're talking about positive behavior approaches in education. It's all about creating an inclusive, empathetic classroom environment where students feel safe, seen, and motivated. And Lisa, doesn't that just sound like the dream scenario?
It really does. You know, I picture a warm, sunlit classroom where everyone knows their role, students are working together, and the teacher supports each child's individual needs. It's like a symphony where every instrument plays in harmony.
Exactly. And it's not just wishful thinking. There are practical, research-backed strategies that can make this a reality. Let's start with why positive behavior approaches matter so much. What's the core idea here?
Well, it all starts with how students feel in the classroom. When students feel safe, noticed, and competent, they're more likely to engage and be motivated. And motivation, as we know, fuels real learning, not just compliance.
Right. It's about going beyond simply managing behavior and instead fostering an environment where students genuinely want to participate and grow. But Lisa, what does the research say about how teacher-student interactions play into this?
Great question. Research shows that teacher-student interactions are one of the biggest predictors of motivation and success in school. Warm, secure interactions boost self-esteem, which then increases intrinsic motivation. That motivation, in turn, drives learning. It's a positive cycle.
That makes perfect sense. And you mentioned earlier that students often fall into three interaction profiles: safe, unstable, and rejected. Can you break that down for us?
Of course. Safe students are confident and curious. They feel secure in the classroom and are generally engaged. Unstable students, on the other hand, often test boundaries or seek attention because they're unsure if they're valued. And then there are rejected students who might be withdrawn, passive, or even exhibit protest behaviors because they feel excluded or overlooked.
Got it. So, it sounds like teachers need to tailor their responses based on these profiles. What are some principles that can guide their approach?
There are a few key principles. First, prioritize relationships. Build trust by noticing and supporting students consistently. Second, be warm but firm. Gentle, consistent firmness is especially helpful for passive or rejected students. And third, teach social and interaction skills explicitly, because for many students, those are prerequisites for learning.
I love that balance of warmth and firmness. It's like being a supportive guide rather than an enforcer. Now, let's talk about some practical systems and routines teachers can implement. What's a good starting point?
A start-of-class ritual is a great first step. It can be as simple as a quick emotional check-in, thumbs up, thumbs down, or an emoji to indicate mood, followed by a reminder of key norms, like we notice, we try, we help. This sets the tone and allows the teacher to spot students who might need extra support that day.
That's such a proactive way to address emotional needs early. What about roles and responsibilities in the classroom? How can those help?
Assigning roles like tech captain or materials lead and rotating them weekly can be hugely beneficial. It gives students a sense of purpose, builds their competence, and raises self-esteem because they're contributing to the class.
I can see how that would work. Everyone has a role to play, and it creates a sense of ownership. What about strategies for transitions? Those can be tricky.
Transitions are a common pain point, but they don't have to be. Using tools like timers, visual routines, or a short verbal script can make transitions predictable and reduce anxiety, especially for students who feel unstable or rejected.
And I imagine those low-intensity signals for attention, like raising a palm or using a chime, are another way to keep things calm and structured during transitions.
Exactly. They help avoid power struggles because they're non-confrontational and part of a routine everyone knows.
Let's switch gears a bit and talk about how teachers can respond to the three student profiles we touched on earlier. What are some specific strategies for safe students?
For safe students, the goal is to challenge them cognitively, give them deep, engaging tasks and leadership roles. And when giving feedback, be specific. For example, instead of saying good job, you might say, your explanation connected evidence and claim, great logic.
That's so much more meaningful than generic praise. What about those unstable or attention-seeking students? How do you stabilize the relationship with them?
Consistency is key. Small, daily interactions, just 5 to 10 seconds each, can make a big difference. Teach them social scripts, like how to ask for attention appropriately, and offer structured choices. For example, you can start with A or B, which do you prefer? It gives them a sense of control without creating chaos.
And when they test boundaries, how should teachers respond?
Avoid dramatic punishments. Instead, use brief redirection and follow up with a private conversation. For instance, you could say, I see you want to be noticed. I'll talk with you for 2 minutes after this activity. For now, please help pass these papers so you're part of the team.
That's such a constructive way to handle it. Now, for the withdrawn or rejected students, what's the best approach?
Gentle, consistent firmness works best. Start with small, doable tasks that match their ability and give immediate, positive feedback for tiny wins. Also, offer private, low-stakes invitations to participate. For example, can I hear one sentence from you? Or bring me your idea later, and we'll build it together.
That's so thoughtful. It really focuses on building trust without overwhelming them. Now, Lisa, let's touch on feedback. What makes feedback truly effective in building self-esteem?
It needs to be specific, genuine, and process-focused. For example, instead of saying good job, you could say, you tried 3 ways before asking for help, smart problem solving. It's about recognizing effort and linking behavior to values.
I love that. It's not just about the outcome but the journey to get there. And rewards, should they be used at all?
Rewards can have their place, but they need to be used sparingly and smartly. Avoid tying them to tasks. Instead, make them unexpected and small, like a note of thanks or spot recognition. This keeps the focus on intrinsic motivation.
Such a good point. Before we wrap up, any final thoughts for teachers looking to implement these strategies?
Yes, remember, behavior is communication. Look for the need behind the action, whether it's attention, safety, competence, or control. Small, consistent efforts to build relationships will pay off in motivation and classroom calm. Start by asking yourself, do I see and value this student? Everything else builds from there.
That's such a powerful takeaway. Well, thank you, Lisa, for unpacking so many practical insights today. As always, we hope these ideas help you create a classroom where everyone can thrive.
Thank you, James, and thanks, everyone. Until next time, take care and keep making a difference in your classrooms.